The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Save big money on everything for your next bathroom project now at Menards. Upgrade your bathroom with Max. With more than 1,000 showers, bathtubs, and surrounds, you're sure to find exactly what you need to add luxury and style to your bathroom. Save big on our entire selection of Max bathroom products. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Hey, how you doing? Welcome back to Pass Gas. This week we're talking about the history of the NHRA. We talked about Wally Parks, the founder of the NHRA, a few weeks ago, but this time we're talking about the history of the organization, how did it come to be, and what are our ideas to help make it more relevant to today's motorsport audience. I've got a bunch of ideas. Joe is actually going to read this one because my voice is going away. So take it away, Joe.
March 8th, 1970 was a day that drastically changed the direction of drag racing. That day brought both catastrophe and catalyst for innovation at the track. That Sunday afternoon at the Lions Drag Strip in Long Beach was a typical day at the races until Don Big Daddy Garlitz pulled his front-engine top-fuel dragster, dubbed the Swamp Rat 13, to the line. The supercharged Hemi chugged like a raspy bulldog. Garlitz erupted off the line and down the track, approaching the finish line at more than 200 miles per hour. As he roared through the finish line, the Swamp Rat's two-speed transmission exploded with the force of a pipe bomb. Transmission case shot forward with immense force and severed the car in two. The front half of the car, which contained the motor and the front end, blew free and raced further down the track, taking Garlitz's right foot with it. As the chaos died down, the crowd was silent with dread. Emergency crews reached the Swamp Rat and pulled Garlitz from the burning wreck. He was gravely wounded. He was raced to the emergency room and underwent multiple surgeries and faced a lengthy recovery. While immobile in his hospital bed and grateful to be alive, Garlitz spent his recovery time with some pen and paper where he redesigned his beloved but destroyed Swamp Rat 13 to be rear engine drive so that the next wreck wouldn't rob him of his other foot if he was ever able to race again. Rather than ending his career, the accident at Lions Drag Strip fueled Garlitz's resolve to revolutionize the sport. Following the horrific accident, the National Hot Rod Association, NHRA, took significant steps to address the safety issues highlighted by the Garlitz crash. After all, the NHRA itself was rooted in safety as much as it was pushing the boundaries of what was possible. So, how did a group of young guys returning from Dub2 turn wrenching into a living? What led them to innovate? And how did one man organize drivers and shape it into the sport of drag racing as we know it? Today on Pass Gas, the NHRA.
Ooh.
Hey, how you doing, everybody? Welcome back to Pass Gas. My name's Nolan Sykes. I'm sitting on the sideline this week. I'm going to listen to this story because Joe Weber is going to be reading it.
Yeah, Nolan said, oh, I bit my tongue super hard.
And I did.
I need an adult to take over.
I do. We also recorded more episodes of the show yesterday.
Yes.
And I feel my voice just burning out.
Yeah, and you deserve a break.
Thanks, dude.
That voice you hear is Nolan Sykes.
Hey, hello. And the voice you haven't heard yet is Bart Bidlingmeyer.
Hi, happy to be here. Thanks for having me. And thanks for introducing me, yeah, Nolan.
You're welcome. And we're talking about a subject close to my heart, I guess.
Yeah, I pointed at Nolan. Yeah. The audio listeners will not have known this, but I pointed to Nolan when I said the Lions Drag Strip because your grandpa, that was his old haunt.
Well, sort of. My dad grew up in Long Beach. close to Lyons Drag Strip. They could hear it from their house. My grandpa actually didn't want my dad going to Lyons Drag Strip.
Oh, wow.
My grandpa worked for a guy named Keith Black, who probably will show up in the story, maybe. We've talked about Keith before on the show, but my grandpa worked for Keith Black, dealt with a lot of racers, and decided that racers were they were scumbags. A lot of these racers,
unsavory types.
Unsavory characters. Mm-hmm. Great word, Bart. Yes, unsavory characters. And didn't want my dad hanging around him at Lyons Drag Strip. So that's the story about Lyons.
I thought it was gonna be like he didn't want his son racing or something.
He didn't want him racing.
Scumbags that's around the racetrack.
Didn't want him hanging out with racers. Also, yeah, I mean, it was pretty dangerous back in the day too. You know.
Yeah.
My dad had like a 67 Camaro that he wanted to turn into a drag car. That car now is a land speed car that his cousin owns.
So you are deeply rooted in this story, and so you want to be a little fly on the wall.
Sort of. Yeah, I want to like listen to the story and chime in when I can.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't really, I honestly don't know a lot of the deep cut history stuff.
Yeah.
Know? And you know what? Maybe we'll have some critiques of professional drag racing at the end of the show, and maybe how to make it more popular here in the U.S.
Sounds like you got something up your sleeve already.
A little bit. I don't know. I got to think about it more.
You got thoughts.
I got some thoughts.
Or a wild hair on your ass.
Yes. Many of those. Bro. Many of those.
Can I have some?
Yeah, we'll do a little hair transplant. Isn't that what they do over in Turkey? They'd like take hair from, is it from your buttocks and put it on your head?
How much hair do you have on your butt?
I'm a hairy guy, Bart. I'm a hairy man.
Yeah. I've seen you got a bare chest.
I'm not very hairy.
You have a bare chest?
Not entirely, but it's
my skin. I got a swath of hamburger meat that my little boy loves. He loves to just pull my shirt down and rip it, and he looks at my face, and I go, ow.
Ow. I want to stop you, but you're having so much fun, and you're my son.
He giggles so hard.
Aw.
Yeah. But anyways, back to my chest hair.
Sorry, real quick. Do you know the gender of your next child?
It's a boy.
Another boy.
Another boy.
Two little boys.
Yeah.
Dang.
That's why we're filming a million episodes, because Nolan is going to be gone this fall, I'm going to be gone this fall. Bart's going to be holding down the castle.
Cool.
In some respect.
Yeah.
Smoking ribs.
Smoking ribs, sweet baby rays.
We have been filming like crazy. Thank you everyone for being a loyal fan. This is just a little nugget of what's to come, but eventually at the end of this year, we're going to reformat this show.
Oh, yes.
And we're going to do seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And the first season is going to be Japan's golden era. So we're going to do two seasons a year. And the first one is going to be really special, and it's going to have a whole season arc, and it's going to be very cinematic. So look forward to that.
Yeah. We just wanted to, try some new things, keep the show fresh. And I think more importantly, switching formats too, you don't always want to do the same thing over and over and over again for years. You want to switch it up and kind of fall back in love with the show and the medium in which you love to work. So that's part of it. And, we value your understanding on this matter.
Yeah. And we are a very, very small crew, and operating at this level, a weekly cadence where we are responsible for 2 hours of content every week.
It's actually crazy.
Is destroying me at a molecular level.
Yes.
So we need to take some breaks.
Have we ever missed a week? We've done re-uploads.
Yes.
We've
But I'd say less than 10 times.
Less than five.
Yeah. In six years, which is a crazy cadence.
Yeah,
and it's unhealthy.
Yeah, it is. So anyway, looking forward to that change, and just, like I said, falling back in love with what we do. Of course, we love doing what we do, but like.
And I think at the core of Donut, at least, and the core of most of our passion lies within JDM. And I think starting with JDM's golden era is like the perfect season to start with. So we're super excited. Can't wait for you to hear it. That's coming next year. Right now we're going to talk about the NHRA.
Let's
get into it.
Not the NRA, the NHRA. My mom used to get worried when I had an NHRA sticker on my car.
Oh, really?
That she's like, well, people are going to think like you're.
Oh, she wasn't worried because she knew what it was.
She knew what
she
it
was. She was worried people were going to think that
I was like super into
guns
and stuff like that. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
They say, good, keep him away from my car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and then.
Then also, I became a member of the NRA.
No, no. Then I had another bumper sticker for the for ANRA, American American Nostalgia Racing Association.
Antifa?
No, no, but that's also like NRA on there.
Oh,
no,
right, because there is
NHRA, ANRA,
and ANRA.
ANRA, yeah,
yeah.
Right. Yeah, let's get into it.
Cool. The story of the NHRA begins in the aftermath of World War II. Soldiers were coming home loaded to the brim with newfound mechanical skills, pockets full of wartime pay, and a need for speed. But the GIs weren't impressed with the milquetoast production cars Detroit was churning out, so they got to wrenching. This was the beginning of hot rodding. Soldiers spent their weekends holed up in their garages cranking out home-built speed machines and then tested them on the dry lake beds of Southern California.
You know, I never got to talk to my great uncle Bob.
Everybody's got an Uncle Bob.
Great Uncle Bob. He also worked for Keith Black. He was like one of the main engine builders there over there at Keith Black. But like he was deployed in World War II in the Pacific. He drove boats, like landing craft. He like landed at Guadalcanal and some of their islands out there. And I've never got the chance to ask him about that, like that phenomenon of like, did he have the mechanical skills before he was deployed?
Probably
come back.
Not.
I think he did
as
a little
extensive.
Bit.
Probably had an aptitude, which is Army's pretty good at that.
Yeah.
And also, when you don't have a lot to work with, and your car breaks down in the jungle, or your boat breaks down, and you have no access to stuff, like you have to MacGyver stuff. That is also a skill.
Yeah.
And it's like super valuable. If you're in the pit lane and maybe you don't have a tool or a part or something, mm-hmm. you have to figure out how to make it work.
He came back from the Pacific, and then him and my grandpa, they like raced boats in Long Beach Harbor.
Yeah.
That's what they did.
I feel you should have a cigarette behind your ear, Nolan.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
My get up.
To the little roll. I'd do one more roll and then put a cigarette behind your ear.
You could have a pretty sick pompadour if you wanted.
Yeah.
Get some become a rockabilly guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Nick 13.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, not everyone could make it out to the desert every weekend, so public roads were just as often used as proving grounds.
Oh, yeah.
This led to a lot of deadly crashes.
Yeah, just race with traffic. Why not?
Before long, hot rodders had become public enemy number one.
Yeah.
Law enforcement, newspapers, and politicians, with ample justification, aimed to shut the whole thing down as fast as possible. It was a disaster, and the sport was on the brink of being canceled by Congress.
Huh. Congress.
Yeah. McCarthy was like,
yeah,
get those communist cars off our road.
I mean, I bet you there was some justification where it's like, they're communist provocateurs terrorizing our streets. Mm-hmm. We need to take care of them.
It's
like, okay, they're annoying. And yeah, people have died.
No, but I saw them shooting pamphlets out of the car when they were drag racing. Wally Parks, a hot rodder and journalist and a guy that we've covered a couple episodes ago, created the National Hot Rod Association in 1951 to address the dangers of street racing. Street racing was growing ever more dangerous and was detrimental to the reputation of hot rodding. His vision was to bring safety and organization to the beloved sport by establishing rules, running sanctioned events, and improving the public image of hot rodders.
Okay. I did not know that.
The NHRA's initial focus was on building a grassroots movement. They distributed literature to help form local clubs.
So they were handing out pamphlets.
Yeah.
Wow.
They also encouraged members to work with law enforcement to show that hot rodders were responsible citizens and to change the public's perception of them.
Hmm.
I don't know how much of that happened. Yeah. The NHRA's iconic...
I'm sure you had, just like today, two camps.
The Blue Lives Matter sticker guys.
No, I was going to say the people who are like, hey, we're going to do this responsibly in a way that doesn't hurt people so that we can keep doing it.
Yeah.
And then you have the camp that says, I don't fucking care. I'll go do a takeover.
Kind of ruining it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The NHRA's iconic safety safari traveled the country to help local communities organize their first official drag races. So
that's where the name comes from. Because they talk, I feel like every track I go to, they, you know, over the intercom, they'll say, oh, the safety safari is going out on track to clean up. And it's like,
It was like like a literal campaign across the U.S. by Wally Parks to show people around the U.S. that drag racing was safe and it could be done well and organized. And
Yeah,
it actually was like, it's like Johnny Appleseed.
Okay.
And he spread, you know, the good word across the U.S.
We modernize it. Johnny Gappleseed. You know, he's planting, taking you to Gappleby's.
Yeah. He's
the Build a Gap workshop. Okay. NHRA, let's take some notes. We'll work together on this. Great.
The safety safaris traveled the country to help local communities organize their first official drag races. The organization also made the controversial but pivotal decision to ban nitromethane in the 1950s, prioritizing safety and long-term growth over raw speed.
Sorry, the safety safari decided that?
Yeah.
Okay.
The NHRA. NHRA. But it's right. The safety safari's job to go around towns and tell everybody.
Like, hey, no,
just like Vin, they go to a puddle on the ground and lick it and say, nitro meth. That was from
Only
Fast
Pussies
Five.
Run nitro meth, famously. God.
And then that pays off later when he kills the guy
and
with his car and says,
pussy.
This commitment to safety laid the foundation for the NHRA's success and its role in transforming drag racing from a chaotic hobby into a legitimate motorsport. By 1955, the NHRA was ready for prime time with the first NHRA national event. Appropriately called the Nationals, this event was held in Great Bend, Kansas, at an airstrip by an eager community that was centrally located enough to draw racers from all over the country.
Cool.
The location ended up being important as it helped solidify the NHRA as a truly national organization that didn't focus on Southern California like other motorsport clubs of the era.
Okay, I was wondering about that too, because like... That's a haven here for that.
Yeah.
Like, just because, like, the culture in the 50s there around here. But, like, they were really trying to make it national. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And deliberately went way out of the way to do that.
Exactly.
Okay. Cool.
The Nationals
You should watch our podcast.
I get to watch it live right now. This is great. Yeah.
The Nationals was also a spectacular showcase for drag racing, proving the sport could be competitive, thrilling, and safe. It was a resounding success and proved Wally's vision was a viable reality. The NHRA was helping to make drag racing mainstream, and the automotive industry soon capitalized on this and created a mutually beneficial relationship between Detroit and Hot Rodders. Though the Big Three had turned their back on the dangers of drag racing in its early days, they eventually issued special edition drag race specific models of their best-selling muscle cars. The NHRA played a crucial role in forging this connection, turning the now famous adage, race on Sunday, sell on Monday, from a simple cliche to a legitimate, highly effective business model that reshaped the automotive landscape. When the Nationals moved to Detroit in 1959, it wasn't just a change of venue. The move was a high-profile introduction to America's auto manufacturers. Before this pivotal moment, hot rodding was largely seen as grassroots and often an underground affair. But the NHRA, with its relentless focus on legitimacy, safety, and organization, began to change that perception as they set up shop near automotive plants. Manufacturers, especially companies like Ford, who were always keen on proving their performance chops, started to notice the massive crowds flocking to drag strips. They realized that drag racing wasn't just a niche hobby confined to dusty, dry lakes or back alley straightaways. It was a powerful proving ground for aftermarket performance parts that could translate directly into showroom appeal. By 1959, the NHRA's influence on the automotive industry was profound and began to transform into an even more legitimate business model. This realization launched a golden age of factory-backed drag racing, where major automakers poured endless resources into backing teams. Suddenly, the same engineers who designed family sedans for supermarket runs were also designing high-compression cylinder heads and heavy-duty transmissions for the drag strip.
Must have been so fun for the employees as well.
You know,
Not just the teams to have this partnership, but like,
finally,
this is why I got into this. Yeah.
The brutal demands of the sport drove relentless technological advancements back at the factories. Big Three engineers developed incredible breakthroughs in drag racing technology. These innovative drag-specific production cars like the Chrysler Max Wedge and the Dodge Hemi Dart.
Max Wedge, baby. Sorry, that's my activation.
Yeah. Offered motors, transmissions, and suspensions that eventually trickled down into production cars, rendering them faster, more reliable, and more exciting. Would you say more reliable?
You need to be pretty robust to go into these cars. So if you're going to put an engine like that into a factory car, it's going to be stronger and more reliable than had you not.
Agreed.
And people are not everyone's driving this like they are in the drag strip. So.
Right.
We'll be right back after these messages.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Now back to the show.
This was all very good for business and led to extensive marketing campaigns featuring slogans like "Drag Strip Champion" to cultivate a performance-oriented identity for the brands.
We're trying to tap into that drag racing market with a little subtle hints like "Drag Racing Champion."
Yeah. And yes, I drag race. Can we move on? The NHRA also created a direct and vibrant connection with enthusiasts in a way that no other type of advertising could. Unlike most motorsports, drag racing attracted a deeply invested crowd of mechanics, tinkerers, and drivers who were in the pit wrenching on their own cars the same day that they go watch racing. Drag racing was unique in motorsports racing because a solo person could field their own car and compete at the highest levels. Other motorsports required knowledgeable teammates and deep pockets, while drag racing success could be grabbed from history with nothing more than hand tools, knowledge, and a scrappy little attitude.
I mean, it's just like, it's the most basic form of racing. It's just, okay, point to point.
Yeah.
Whoever gets their first wins, there you
go. You don't need to be a queen of the steering wheel.
No, you don't.
The first time, I didn't know what torque steer was, and Alex Rodriguez, our old editor, had a Mazda Speed 3 hatch. Loved the thing.
Love that car.
He recently sold it, I think.
I think he did.
To get a BRZ or something like that.
Yep.
But he was like, oh, you don't know what torque steer is. You should try my car. And it is super noticeable in that car, at least. Because I think it's that one's like 275 horsepower. So you like peel off the line. One of the half shafts is a little bit shorter. Maybe less weight, so that wheel spins a little bit faster or something.
I don't know if it's we don't have to get super into it, but yeah, jerks the wheel.
Yeah, jerks the wheel.
And you do have to be a queen of the steering wheel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least for the first launch.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you can be a normal person of the steering wheel.
Yeah.
The Fusion, it doesn't take much for torque steer because my Fusion.
My Civic does it a little bit.
Yeah, where it's like, it's just a normal, you know, but imagine if you imagine it with a larger engine.
Yeah. Oh, I can't. Anyways. Like one of Papadakis's Civics. Right? That's got to be crazy. And while at NHRA events, manufacturers and engineers could interact directly with customers to gather lucrative feedback on products while building fierce loyalty. This is the original data harvesting.
Yeah. Now we just have AI powered cameras that watch everything we do.
And cookies.
And cookies tracking your movements online.
Sometimes I'll get like served things and I'm like, do I have ulcerative colitis?
I do think about that sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, what do they know that I don't about my own self?
There's things that have come out from like conversation that I have not Googled.
Yeah.
I've talked to someone about something.
Do you remember it was a big three? Remember Kyle was here?
Yeah.
And we kind of went on a digression about how much hair he has and and like what size hat must you wear.
Yeah, okay.
I went home that day and was served an Instagram ad for larger than normal baseball caps for people with big
heads. I'm over it, dude. I'm over it.
Like, it was the same afternoon. I sent it to Kyle and I was like, dude.
What the hell?
I've been trying to cut back. I just made an Instagram post this morning, but I'm trying to like use the apps less because I'm just like, I'm sick of all
which
that
one
shit.
Of them.
Big Hats made me think of this really funny picture that I saw. Cowboys lost by a lot the other day. And there's this guy in the audience that just had to look really sad.
That's really good. That's going on the podcast.
Yeah, it's got to go.
He's not happy.
Oh. Oh, no.
As we had mentioned earlier, the NHRA initially banned nitromethane in 1957 due to safety concerns. This led many of the top fuel-burning racers to leave the NHRA and compete in independent races, particularly in California's smoker meets. You ever heard of this? I know you heard of smoker meets.
I've heard of smoker meets, but not in drag racing. Yeah.
The ban was a defining moment as it forced the NHRA to confront the balance between safety and the pursuit of ultimate speed.
Interesting.
However, by the early 1960s, a compromise was reached. The NHRA began to understand that to be the premier sanctioning body, they needed to embrace the most powerful and fastest cars.
Yeah.
This led to the lifting of the ban, and in 1963, the NHRA introduced Top Fuel as an official eliminator class.
I mean, if you guys have never been to a NHRA event or other sort of drag racing event where nitro cars are present, I mean, the stuff is extremely volatile.
Yeah.
You can go around in the pits and see the, you know, funny cars and rail cars kind of like warming up their engines and like the exhaust. You know, if you're not careful, it's almost like being tear gassed, really. Yeah. Like it really chokes you out. And then, you know, the power potential from the fuel is insane. That's how they're able to do quarter miles or 1,000 foots in less than 4 seconds. It's really nasty stuff. And I can imagine at the time, especially in the 50s, dude, they were like eating asbestos. Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think they were eating.
They put it in all the food, man. No. They had the uranium glass and shit like that, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So they...
Safety wasn't
safety
a huge
advances
concern
weren't exactly very high back then, but
The first NHRA Top Fuel race as an official eliminator was held at the 1963 Winter Nationals in Pomona, California,
yes, which I still do,
where legendary driver Don Garlitz emerged as the victor. This event marked the beginning of a new era for drag racing, putting the NHRA at the forefront of the sport.
Pomona is pretty cool.
Early Top Fuel engineering was a constant process of trial and error.
Yeah.
The cars were essentially long, spidery frames known as dragsters or rail jobs. cool. They did. I do kind of miss like putting job on objects.
He's built himself a real rail job.
Oh, look at that rail job over there. Yeah.
I love that.
So they had powerful engines mounted in front of the driver. The heart of the car was the engine, typically a supercharged Chrysler Hemi running on a high percentage of nitrometh.
Yeah, front engine dragsters. Yeah, long. Engine's right in front of you. The transmission, you're sitting on top of the rear axle. So the pumpkin where the differential is like right where your balls are at.
Oh my God. You just feel that like spooling up and.
Yeah, it's kind of dangerous.
And then
the tires are like right next to your head, basically, because you're in your little driver compartment. Easy. The tires are right there. Pretty violent place to be, I imagine.
And are you getting hit with the fumes or is there like side pipes or something?
Well, there's. They ran like shorty pipes like that go like, you know, U shape. Yeah, you're getting hit with the fumes, and that's why the helmets, even back then, like they had like gas masks, kind of like now they have them integrated into the helmet. Mm-hmm. Looks super sick. But back then they'd have like just like your normal kind of like open face helmet. You put on your goggles and then a gas mask underneath.
That's crazy. Yeah,
it's pretty cool look.
I do think like I understand why they moved the engine to the back, but I do think. Front engine dragsters look cool.
They're sick, and they still run them in like nostalgia, like ANRA, ANRA. Mm-hmm. They run them in that, and like other nostalgia leagues around the country. You can still like, we have a front engine chassis in my dad's garage. We eventually want to put the engine from the Bonneville car into that because that'd be really fun, and then eventually graduate up to like a nitro. But yeah, they still run them. They're still. Crazy to watch.
Scary.
Yeah, they're fast.
Drivers like Don Garlitz and Don Prudhomme were not just racers, but also pioneering engineers, pushing the boundaries of what was possible. The quest for more speed and more power led to innovations like the use of multi-stage clutches, which allowed for controlled slippage off the starting line to prevent immediate tire spin.
Yeah, I mean, if you watch like some of the early like nitro cars, like old vintage footage, from the time. A lot of the racing for a long time was just like doing burnouts all the way down the strip.
Whoa.
Because they couldn't control the tire spin. Yeah. So it was just like who could ever do the best, like fastest burnout down the track.
Jeez.
One.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's wild. And that's why the speeds were so, like when you talk about 200 miles an hour in the intro, like with modern clutch technology and modern tires on that car, it'd probably be much faster.
Oh, yeah.
But because there's just so much tire spin was just like an inherent part of like your setup.
I'm still amazed that they use bias ply tires. Now I know the science behind it, but still, like when we were doing high-low, you were like, yeah, it's floaty. Mm-hmm. Like you still have to be able to control it.
Yeah.
What is the point of that?
I think it's because like it twists more, right? Like the sidewalls can flex and twist.
So you're not just like ripping the tire.
Right. So you're not blowing them off immediately, basically.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And also they come back. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you get the tire like there.
An elastic
and then,
effect.
Exactly.
Okay.
To launch it.
The introduction of slapper bars, wheelie bars.
Slap bar job on that one.
Got a real slap job.
Slapper bar on that. Slapper bar on that rail job over there, huh?
And then eventually a much more stable rear engine design also helped to curb the violent wheel stands and handling issues that plagued early cars.
I mean, that's the other thing, too, is like sometimes you'll see photos of cars doing wheelies while doing a burnout, though, at the same time, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Like a car will hook up, lift the front off, and then blow the tires off, and then it's like, and yeah.
Jeez. The evolution of Top Fuel from a dangerous spectacle to a controlled professional sport was due in large part to the NHRA's rigorous regulations. Following a series of crashes, most notably Don Garlett's famous transmission explosion from the intro, the NHRA implemented a host of new safety rules. They mandated fire-resistant driver suits, safety harnesses, and eventually a rear-engine dragster design that Garlitz himself pioneered. Have you heard of Garlitz before?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Swamp Daddy.
Swamp Daddy. Ride the rail job. Swamp Daddy. That's the guy. I'd make a great announcer in the drag race. They also began to standardize chassis construction and require safety inspections for all cars. These rules, along with the introduction of the modern Christmas tree starting system and standardized timing, brought an unprecedented level of professionalism and safety to the sport.
Because before the Christmas tree, they had a guy jumping in the air with flags going, whoa! Like,
wowee!
Yeah, wowee.
Yeah. The NHRA's commitment to both speed and safety has been the key to Top Fuel's success as a historical category. By embracing the power of nitromethane while simultaneously imposing strict rules and safety standards, the NHRA allowed the sport to grow from a niche hobby into a major motorsport. The engineering arms race for more speed and power was allowed to continue, but only within the confines of a rulebook that prioritized driver protection. The result is a sport where cars can exceed 330 miles per hour in under 3.7 seconds.
Insane.
It's just silly. Just,
it is silly.
I mean, it's crazy that Brittany Force keeps breaking the record.
I know.
It's like, how how fast can you like physically
Where's
go?
Where's the line? Yeah.
Before you go back in time.
It's So
it is truly a spectacle that has to be seen and felt to comprehend. And the NHRA's role as a regulator and innovator cannot be overstated. When drag racing began to formalize in the 1960s, a new breed of car emerged to challenge the traditional dragsters. Born from factory-backed super stock cars with altered wheelbases for improved traction, these vehicles earned the nickname funny cars for their unusual look.
He's my favorite.
This unconventional design, which featured a production car body on a heavily modified chassis, quickly gained popularity with fans, leading to an all-new class.
Yeah, I mean, before the funny car became like its own thing, like looking at the very first ones is super interesting because they are like stock. They are, you know, stock body cars.
Real jobs.
They're real jobs.
They're real jobs. But then like, you know, I think it was kind of like a divergence between funny car and like pro stock car. Like the pro stock cars use stock chassis and stuff like that. And these days, I don't think they do. They use like tube chassis and stuff. But, the funny cars like got even more crazy. Like they'd put like the engines further back on the chassis like did their own like chassis engineering and stuff until they were kind of completely unrecognizable. And then they start putting like the fiberglass bodies over top of a rail. But then, like, the bodies themselves started getting more and more cartoonish, like, more aerodynamic
still,
and all that.
Yeah.
They still, I think what's cool about it is they still look like cars. Not like you're going to see it at the grocery store. Right. But it's
they
like,
look like stockies.
The shape, you know, it's like, oh,
yeah.
And I think there's something in the human brain,
that
appeals to, as opposed to the giant open air monsters.
That's fair.
Where you're kind of like, that's not a car,
and they're not even a
car
anymore.
With an engine in
now
the back.
They have closed cockpits, the top fuel cars.
But they're it's the rail, funny the that they jobs. Still feel the need to make it look, you know, like oh, it's got windows.
Headlights.
I think it's almost
they have headlights. So
it's almost like they don't need to do that. No one's being like, oh, I want to buy that Camry now.
That's what's hilarious is like the suit. I think that Toyota's is a Supra, but it looks like
nothing like a Supra.
It's,
I love it.
And to a lesser extent, I think NASCAR does that too, where those are like, you know, tube frame chassis with a guise of a Camry.
It's a Camry, so funny.
The engineering of these funny cars was a fascinating mix of ingenuity and trial and error. Racers quickly moved away from modified production chassis to purpose-built lightweight tube frames and developed hinged fiberglass bodies to easily access the powerful engines.
Yeah, so you can just like lift the body up, put a little like, you know, rod basically, hold the body up, and like you don't have to get, or you can just easily access all the motor and everything like that.
Yeah.
Help the driver get in and out of the car as well.
It's like a bird cleaning an alligator's teeth.
Exactly.
Dude, great visual.
Thanks.
That'd be a sick body for a car, is an alligator head over the top of the car.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, they could go full Monster Jam with it if they wanted to.
They should.
Yeah.
We'll save that for the end. Save it for the end.
Keep that in mind.
Right. Okay. We'll wait for
alligator head.
Nolan's marketing job at the end.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after these messages.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Now back to the show.
These technological leaps allowed the cars to handle the immense power of supercharged nitromethane burning engines. The NHRA took notice of the burgeoning class and in 1966 gave them an official home, sanctioning their first national event at the NHRA World Finals in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Tulsa, baby.
The NHRA's role, however, wasn't just about creating new classes. It was about shaping the sport's future. The sanctioning body played a crucial role in the evolution of Top Fuel, the fastest class in the sport. After the NHRA brought back nitrometh as a class, they wrote it into the new strict rulebook. This move transformed Top Fuel from a group of outlaw racers into a highly regulated professional sport with rules governing everything from engine size to safety equipment. The NHRA continued to evolve, especially in the 2000s, driven by a renewed focus on safety and a desire to improve competition. In 2008, the professional class of Top Fuel and Funny Car were shortened from a quarter mile to 1,000 feet to reduce high-speed risks.
Yeah, Eric Medlin crashed, I think, in 2006 or 7 and died as a result. I think he went into the sand trap at the end of the course.
Oh, like his parachute didn't work or something?
I think so. I forget the details, but it was Eric's crash that caused that change.
Do they also have brakes, or is it just the parachute?
Oh, they got brakes. Okay. Yeah, you have brakes. Only on the rear axle, though.
Oh.
But yeah, the parachutes do the
because then
majority of them.
If the front brake locked up, they would just do like an endo?
I think it's just... Wait. Do they have brakes on the front?
No, Top Fuel dragsters do not have front brakes.
Okay. I think funny cars do, though. But still, the parachute does the majority of the braking at those speeds because like at 300 miles an hour plus, 350, your brakes aren't going to do a lot. in that short a time.
Yeah.
You got to use other means.
You are right. Funny cars do have front carbon fiber brakes.
Yes. They're pretty expensive.
And they squeak. Yeah. But you know how they're good is they squeak.
That's how you know they're
Those
good.
Those are good brakes.
Oh, I've had good brakes for the last two or three months.
You use the brakes to like stage the car at the
Christmas tree. Yeah, that makes sense.
That's mostly what they're used for.
Yeah. The organization also introduced the countdown to the championship in 2007, a playoff-style format to make the season finale more exciting.
NASCAR does that too. It's just terrible.
Why?
Because
you feel it's redundant? Because if you're in the playoff, you've got enough points.
Well, yeah, and also, like, I get what they're doing because it's, I don't know exactly how NHRA's does, but NASCAR's at least, it's like, okay, all you got to do to get into the playoffs and keep advancing in the playoffs is just win a race rather than, like, finish well. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay.
So, like, you could have people that, like, kind of sucked all season.
Get lucky
and advance into the playoffs and, like, win and stuff like that.
The old luck job.
The old luck job and the rail job, dude. So, I don't know. Just, like, reward a team that, like, does well, that, like, finishes high consistently and like, has the occasion. Well,
they still have other trophies for what that is.
What is F*** it, dude. I don't know. It's just not.
I don't have a horse in this race.
People don't like it, and I also am with them on that.
By the 2020s, the NHRA continues to adapt and innovate with a focus on both tradition and forward-looking approach. The series is expanding its presence with new tracks being added to the schedule for the 2026 season in celebration of its 75th anniversary. It's kind of crazy how like NASCAR, NHRA, and F1 all celebrate their 75th anniversary within a couple of years.
That is interesting.
Everything started in the 50s.
Yeah, after World War II.
Yeah. While the core of Top Fuel and Funny Car remains the same, insane power and speed, the NHRA is also embracing new initiatives like the Mission Tortillas hashtag Too Fast, Too Tasty challenge.
Okay, tell me more.
A mid-season specialty race that adds extra drama and prize money.
Okay.
And a little extra flavor.
Well, it's also interesting. Sorry, just to interrupt real quick. The cars are safer and the chassis designs are different. A little, like, they've advanced for sure, but like at the heart of it, the engine, they still all use the 426 Hemi like the blueprint.
Wow. You know,
they're not like the same. It's not like they're going out and buying vintage 426s and converting them, but even
like the Supra Funny Car uses, why wouldn't not a B58 or something?
Well, because that wouldn't handle 10,000 horsepower. You know, they're making over like 12,000 horsepower from these engines on nitro meth.
Yeah.
It's because, the architecture has been so proven and refined. Mm-hmm. You know, guys like Alan Johnson will take, like...
I love his screwdriver.
Do they get the valve tick?
I don't know. I don't think so. But, like, you know, they have, like, the
architecture.
The architecture of the Hemi block. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, a lot of different teams put their own spin on it. Like, Alan Johnson is, like, a supplier of engines, but a lot of other guys have, like, started building their own engines for their teams and stuff. But they all use the foundation of the 426 Hemi from the 60s.
That's crazy.
Isn't that wild?
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to interrupt me.
It's like if every F1 team was still using like the DFV, you know?
Which would be sick.
Yeah.
That'd be fucking sick. Yeah. Talk about DFV, that's sick. I thought you were going to interrupt me and be like, well, actually, Mission actually makes good salsas and chips too.
I'm a pace kind of guy.
Really?
No,
New York I do like City?
Pace, I will go on the record and say Pace is the worst salsa. Pace?
I think when you're purchasing a product, there is always a brand that epitomizes the very middle of that product.
Yes.
And I think that's Pace. And
if I'm going to a Super Bowl party in Southern California and purchasing Pace, no. If I'm slow cooking chicken in my slow cooker, I'm putting that salsa verde on there.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say, you're going to put Pace Chunky Mild?
No.
In a slow cooker with chicken? That sounds like the blandest.
It's not bad.
It got me through
college.
It got me through college. But you know, like I'm saying, like Pace fueled many a white person taco night in my family.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's true.
Absolutely.
You got the Ortega taco seasoning. on some ground beef or ground turkey.
Crunchy tortilla.
We do soft tacos.
Oh, okay.
Soft taco kind of guy.
You're from the Santa Maria region, so I would.
That's true.
I would imagine that you have access to some good tortillas.
How do you how do you heat up your hard tacos, guy? You got a method?
Oh, I never heat it up. I let the meat heat it up.
Oh, okay.
I do a meat job on it.
I was waiting.
How do you do it?
I don't know if I should follow that up. I think that's I put them in the oven, but I hang them on the rack. So
that's cool.
Yeah, that's good. Cool. That's really innovative.
God, you know what? I'm going to make some fucking white trash tacos tonight, dude.
I do have an unopened sleeve of Ortega hard crunchy shells that I might make them tonight.
Yeah, I might do the same. This is great.
They should come up with a new
Taco
name.
Taco Tuesday.
You know?
It is Tuesday.
A new name for tacos?
The crunchy white people tacos.
Okay. I think that's what they call them. Crunchy white. Like the Ortega box says crunchy white people tacos.
It is just a big ass chip, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I like it so much. I think chips and salsa is the perfect snack. Mm-hmm. And
when Dorito started the Doritos Taco Bell shell.
Yeah.
That was a great.
Those are delicious.
That was a great advancement in white person tacos. Yes.
They sell those too at the store now.
Really?
Yeah. Although I will say, if you grow into become a human being, they're not as good.
Yeah.
As you remember them.
Yeah. They don't hit as hard anymore now that I have my degree.
That's exactly right.
Okay. So back to.
Once I stopped drinking jug wine, they didn't hit as hard. Mad anymore. Dog. My last semester of college, in those final days, I probably purchased two or three
Carlo Rossi's
and just lived off Little Caesar's pizza.
And then your frontal cortex developed.
Oh, God. What are we talking about?
Mission tortillas.
Okay.
The sport is also seeing a new wave of star power with drivers like Tony Stewart joining the top
fuel
ranks.
That's brand overlap, I bet.
We talked
Tony Stewart and
no
Doritos?
Mission Tortilla and donut. You know,
well, actually,
it's like Mission Tortilla NHRA. Podcast.
There is 6 degrees of separation between us because they are a partner with Peterson Automotive Museum. And whenever we talked about doing like live podcasts, they were like, "Oh, would you allow Mission to supply food for it?"
Oh wow,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, because that guy, one of the owners of Mission, owns all those F1 cars that are in the Peterson.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow. What a life.
What a life.
So Tony Stewart joining the top fuel ranks and a younger generation of racers beginning to dominate the professional classes, ensuring a vibrant future for the sport. But the NHRA's most impactful contribution to safety is no doubt its comprehensive rulebook. The 438-page document covers every single aspect of the sport, from intricate blueprints of required car construction to the granular specifics of safety equipment requirements. It even delves into the precise specifications for track construction and the meticulous operational procedures. This immense annually updated document provides a standardized framework that ensures a baseline level of safety across every single NHRA sanctioned event, from the smallest local track to the biggest national job. But a rule book is only as good as its enforcement, and this is where the track underdogs appear. The technical inspectors. Before any fire-breathing monster is allowed to make a single pass down the quarter mile, it undergoes an excruciatingly rigorous inspection by trained NHRA officials.
Mm-hmm. In basketball, you can hate the ref. In baseball, you can hate the umps. In drag racing, they're saving your life.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of that like, ah, crap, I didn't get, you know, my battery, whatever. And you might be pissed off, but you're immensely grateful for the job that they have to do.
I've been doing drag racing for a long time. We had junior drag racing when I was a kid, and then the Door Slammer, that was an NHRA. But then, like, you know, going to meets like the March meet at Famoso and Hot Rod Reunion and stuff, like the safety scrutineering is pretty high there. And, like, we've never been in an issue where, like, the car, it doesn't work.
Right.
Because, like, one, you want to keep your driver alive. So, like, you're not going to, there's not a lot of like advantages in sidestepping safety in drag racing that'll help you.
But also like in, but as someone getting started, let's say, oh, you might not know this.
Yeah.
Right. And then not only is it protecting that person who might not know it, but it's protecting the person that they were about to race.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it can't be just that looks good or good enough.
Yeah.
Because if that had started happening, we wouldn't be where we were.
And especially now with, especially at the top level that we're talking about with the fuel cars and stuff, like all those chassis and stuff, those are built by usually like very, like people who only do that. Their whole business is building chassis, and like their business would take a hit if all of a sudden their chassis weren't passing tech inspection and whatever. So like, the safety is almost built into the industry now.
It incentivizes safety by having the inspectors, not necessarily that the inspectors are making things safer.
Yeah. Just for example, when we did the, this is not related to drag racing, but with the Baja truck outside, before we did it in Nora, during the build process, we had a tech inspector come visit the shop and scrutinize our chassis and truck so far. And like, he gave us a laundry list of things that we had to change, and we did. So we went through safety inspection very quickly when we were actually down in Ensenada, and like every pro team does something like that where, you know, if the chassis is being built or whatever, everything's already being expected as it, or inspected as it's being put together.
From the earliest days of cars that topped out at 60 miles per hour on dry lake beds to alternative fuel fire-breathing monsters, the NHRA has been there watching and learning as the dragsters innovate and get faster and faster. It was never just about safety. Though the lives of racers are the most important factor, it was about legitimizing a motorsport that had been seen as the car world's version of a Wild West shootout. Today, the National Hot Rod Association stands tall and proud as the undisputed premier governing body for drag racing across the globe. An endless list of events that are held annually across the country, ranging from new folks at a local airstrip to the fiercely competitive national races that crown champions and shatter records and make a ton of money. The sport continues to attract an even more intensely passionate and deeply loyal fan base today, now more than ever. The core principles etched in stone by Wally Parks are the same today as they were 70 years ago. While the cars themselves are much, much faster and the technology packed into every component is exponentially more advanced than Wally could ever have dreamed, the fundamental mission is to provide a safe environment to go as fast as possible remains. So that is the story of the NHRA. Yes. Nolan, you have a plan to make it more interesting?
Not a full plan, but just some things that I've just been thinking about with the
NHRA. I remember you brought this up a while ago that you think that it needs to shift to electrification.
Yeah, that's my first point. No, I actually love the thing about the alligator head. Let's talk about that first.
Okay.
Let's make the cars more exciting to look at, first of all. Okay? With funny cars, they don't look like cars anyway, so let's go crazy with it. Let's monster jam it, as you said.
Put big arms on it.
That would probably hurt performance, but like alligator head, a wedge of cheese, perhaps? Yeah.
No, what about a Naruto run arms?
Sure, try it out.
Weapons.
Like, I think like leaning into how goofy the funny cars look in the first place would be a great way to get like kids really interested in it. Like, imagine you're seeing like a Supra roll up and then next to it a car that looks like an alligator head, and you tell me that every kid in that crowd isn't going to become a lifelong fan of the alligator head.
Yeah,
the swamp thing. Like, let's do that.
Let's
think
do
about that.
How about that?
How about that? Okay. Second of all, I was thinking about. I've been thinking a lot about like outlaw cars, right? Like drag racing, NHRA is kind of like not as relevant as it used to be. Even like, I don't know, they're having a hard time, I think, getting people excited for the pro level stuff. Even though the top fuel stuff is extremely fun to watch, it's an experience you have to go see at least once in your life watching those top fuel cars go. But like drag racing is having a very big resurgence right now, but it's all like the street outlaws.
My point was that it's cars that look like cars, and it creates a greater connection.
Yeah.
So to your point of like people racing the cars that they built in their garage as opposed to those funny cars.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know if this is where you're going. I'm sorry that I interrupted. But that would bring attention back
totally
to those top fuel.
Yeah. Now there might be like a, maybe a conflict of not interest, but like philosophy. If it's like, hey, we've got these outlaw cars and like racers that don't necessarily want to be in like a system, but you know, there was a sold out outlaw event at Famosa Raceway, where it was all just cars, like Bart mentioned, like people building them in the garage. You know, a few of the guys from Street Outlaws, which are obviously very professionally built.
But
cars,
even those, but, not to forget, those have to pass inspection.
Yes, of course. You know, so. Yeah, so they're safe.
Yeah.
But it's like, let's try to bring that scene into the fold a yep. little bit. Also, if we're talking about, okay, the NHRA was started.
Donk Master.
Donks, maybe, but like the NHRA was started to curb street racing.
Right.
What's the problem
if that's
of the day?
Exactly. If that's the point, yes. why not?
Takeovers.
Let's bring in takeovers.
Yeah.
There's already like burnout events, burnout wars started by Zach from Hoonigan. You know, that's his organization. Let's have an NHRA event where we invite burnout wars yep. to have their own section of the parking yeah. lot. So like in between rounds, like you're not watching like the sportsman cars and like some of the lower level racers that are like doing 12 second quarter miles, 11, even like it's not, you're going to the pits. You're watching the funny car teams work on the cars. You're watching the other yeah. top fuel cars work on their cars. But also let's have a big ass burnout box with stands and stuff that people can watch that. Get excited about that. Maybe you bring the takeover crowd, the burnout crowd to an NHRA event. They're there for the burnouts, but then they go get to see the top fuel cars. And yeah. then now they're like, oh shit, I like drag racing. Burnout cars are basically drag cars right. with skinny tires on the back anyway. Let's bring that into the
in,
fold.
In South Africa, they have spinning.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's sanctioned.
Yeah.
Because they're like, we can't do, and it's, I mean, that is basically a takeover.
So let's, yeah.
And it's successful.
Also, I know this is hard, but like I feel like we can do a lot better on the drag racing video game front. I bought the okay. NHRA, or didn't buy it. It was like free on PlayStation. Mm-hmm. So I got the drag racing game, and it was god awful. Mm-hmm. I feel like we could be doing more there. The easiest way to get kids involved in racing is to like hook them with video games when they're young and make them want to do it for real.
Mm-hmm. That's what cigarette companies do.
Let's make a good game. Let's try making a mm-hmm. good game.
Yeah.
First, you know.
All right, we've solved it.
Yeah. So Monster Jam. Let's Monster Jam it up.
Did you guys get EA cigarettes? Guys, 26?
We are both of our cameras are going to
okay,
die.
I know. There's a tense atmosphere because everyone's afraid of the cameras, but we have audio. This is audio format. God damn it. Monster Jam it. Put some Monster Jam on it. Bring the Outlaws in. Bring the Takeover Kids in. Make a good video game, and we can maybe make the NHRA relevant again. So that's my case.
Solve job.
Yes, solve job on the rail jobs.
Well, that's
not to,
it.
Not to forget, we all appreciate the Hot Rodder, the NHRA. Like, that's why we're doing this. We're not saying it's not good.
I want it to keep going. That's why I have these concerns. That's yeah. why I want it to be survive or want it to survive because okay. I grew up doing it.
100%.
Okay, that's our show. The NHRA, great episode. Thank you, Joe, so much for reading.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. Follow Bart at BidsBarto. Follow Joe at Joe G. Weber. Follow me at Nolan J. Sykes. Our cameras are about to run out of battery. See you next time, guys. We love you.